Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we offer expert advice so you can have an amazing sex life. And we're not just a podcast. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com and find our wealth of resources, including our online multimedia courses that are there for you to guide you step by step in developing new erotic skills in the comfort of your own home whenever you are ready. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com, check them out, and use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off any of the courses whenever you want. Whenever you want. In our role as pleasure mechanics, we do many things. We read a lot about sex. We talk to everyone and anyone about sex, including random strangers on the train. And we also go on field trips for you, all in the name of research. We wanted to tell you the story of one such field trip, a research mission we went on in the fair city of Las Vegas. Just to set this up, this was a few years back. We were traveling the country as part of a book tour with an author, and we were going from city to city and teaching workshops in little sex toy stores and doing book readings and meeting lots of people, and it was a wild romp around the country. And it really was coast to coast, from Seattle to Miami and back again. It was
then New York
and, quite epic. And we were in Las Vegas and kind of just hanging out for a couple days doing a conference, and these very good looking men approached us and handed us a flyer and were like, "See you there tonight, good looking," kind of thing. We were like, "Whoa, I got a coupon from a good looking man.
Hello, Vegas."
And so we decided, in the name of research, we had to go and see American Storm.
The strip joint.
Well, it's no. America's hottest male review.
Quote.
So, American Storm is one of these shows. It's in Vegas. It's been there for years. And it is a male strip review for women. And most of the women in the audience are there for his, like,
bachelorette parties.
And with groups of friends. And they're all piss drunk. And we decided that we should go completely sober. We had a 2-for-1 coupon and see the show. So, Charlotte, tell us about it. What's the setup?
Well, there are bars everywhere. It is dark. You're in a theater. There are just so many drunk women. And the stage.
With like a pulse of excitement in the crowd, right? So people are like screaming and gyrating and excited. And then the stage dims, and out come men. And it's, how do we describe this? It's a series of fantasies.
Yeah.
So the men explore, I think there's about 6 or 7 dancers in the troupe, and they do solo dances, and they do group dances, but it's all about different archetypes and fantasies.
I really remember this one guy opening up his, like, trench coat with this hat, and then, like, flinging open his coat, and then the women went wild. I mean, it was just very...
Like, here was a flasher fantasy. But there was the cowboy with his jeans and his strut, and then there was the, like, police officer, and then there was, like, the construction crew, and all of these different archetypes. There was, like, the outlaw. Is that the trench coat one?
I think outlaw? That was the outlaw. Right.
Who had, like, a gun, and he fired, like, a cap on stage, and, like, smoke came out of the gun, and the women were like, "Woo!" And meanwhile, so the guys are dancing and kind of strutting and stripping down to, like, G-strings.
Right. It's kind of Magic Mike style, right? If you saw that film.
And who hasn't seen it? And the sequel, Double XL, is what it's called.
I don't remember.
Magnum Mike. They're stripping, but then what surprised us, and that's what I expected. I expected kind of it to stay on stage and the men to strip and flex their pecs and do their little ab shimmies, and, you know, we get some eye candy for the evening. And that's what I went in expecting. What I didn't expect is the way they worked the crowd. So they would come out into the crowd and play with the audience. And when I say play, it wasn't like, "Hey, cutie, give me a dollar." There was no dollars in the G-strings, first of all. That was a major difference between male and female strippers. It was all about engaging them in this fantasy of, like, "I'm gonna choose you." And so all the women are, like, begging to be chosen, and, "It's my way, my bachelorette party, and it's my birthday." and they're circulating in the crowd, and as they're doing this, they're touching the women. They're rubbing the women's face into their abs and pecs. They are face humping the women, like literally putting their face in their crotch and humping their faces.
I was deeply shocked. I was like, what happened to consent? I feel very confused and a little bit.
Yeah, we were sitting there like, don't pick me, don't pick me. And not because the men weren't hot and fun and sexy, like they did all of that right. But yeah, there was no like active communication about, do you consent to be face humped right now?
In a group of hundreds.
But the women were begging for it. And then yeah. I guess that's the consent. Like they were literally raising their hand and saying, face hump me next.
Well, I don't think they exactly knew what was happening, but there was an incredible amount of enthusiasm.
And then they got brought up onto stage. Like the chosen women got brought up onto stage. Some of them were like put on chairs and like put down on the ground and like kind of had simulated sex. Like they would go through all of the motions of sex and do this like kind of dancey humpy thing into the women's bodies. And the crowd went wild. The crowd loved it. They were totally engaged. And after about an hour of this or something, they come out and then they say, join us at the after party in the bar attached to this theater. The guys will be there all night long. And I thought, like, damn, these guys have to work hard.
They were working so hard.
They were circulating in the casinos and the conference centers, handing out the coupons for admission all throughout the day. Then they did this whole show.
And then they had to go hang out in the bar and hang out more. I was like, how much are they being paid?
Not enough. And I think it's, like, to stoke that fantasy again of, like, this guy's not only on stage, he's going to be hanging out in the bar just chilling. Like, you can go meet Teddy and...
Continue your fantasy.
And so we came out of this a little bit dazed.
I felt a little bit mind blown.
It was like midnight in Vegas. We were walking around and we were like, what just happened? Because as deeply embedded in sex culture as we are, I have been to a million strip clubs all around the world.
Of women.
Of, you know, strip clubs of women on stage and on trapezes and all sorts of things. Trampolines. Like, I love strip clubs in some ways, and in some ways they're abysmal. But...
problematic.
I wasn't expecting this from a male strip review. I wasn't expecting the level of crowd engagement and the level of physical contact, because in strip clubs with women stripping, you do not touch, right? And that's, I guess you can go and do a lap dance, but you do that in private. It's behind a closed door.
You pay extra.
And one of the biggest things is, like, you know, the physical boundary between the fantasy on stage performing for you and you, the audience. And men in strip clubs are usually very understated, quiet. Like, you don't see men being like, yeah, baby, woo! Like, you'd be thrown out by the bouncer.
I was just blown away by how much enthusiasm and, like, wildness the women expressed.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we hear so much from women who are having real trouble accessing that in life. And in their own sexuality, in their own bedrooms. And so I felt like there was this real disconnect for me of what people are talking about privately. And then that there was this, like, alternate space that was created where women were just truly unleashing. I mean, I understand they were deeply alcohol-fueled. But they were just, there was this sort of, like, unbridled, lusty enthusiasm and, like, acceptance almost of anything sexual.
Well, I remember talking about it as we left and being like, was that just 1,000 women in this theater together who are all wild sex animals at home?
I don't think so.
No,
right.
No. Like, that can't possibly be. These are the women we're hearing from who are having unsatisfying sex, who don't like to be seen naked, who don't use their voices during sex, who don't know how to dirty talk. Like, these are the women who are deeply inhibited in their bedrooms, and they come to this Vegas theater and something is unleashed. Right. So it's not that it's not in them.
Right.
It's clearly deeply pent up, a caged animal within.
Right. That went feral at the space that was allowing for that to be there. And I just wanted people to be able to access that in their own bedrooms at home with the men that they love or care about or want to be having sex with. How do we transition that and take and make a space for that, to live in a more holistic, wholesome way?
So how do we do that?
I mean, I hope we're working on that podcast by podcast, kind of undoing all the things that are in the way. But it was just very fascinating to observe.
A few thoughts here. One, would women behave that way in a co-ed space? My memory is that there was a couple gay men.
Yeah, like friends who are part of the parties. Yeah,
you know, that gay man that gets invited to the bachelorette party because he's one of the girls.
Right.
But there were not couples there together.
No, no.
And it was not a co-ed space.
Right.
So, A, I think that this kind of energy could not be exposed to the male gaze safely. Right? Like, this couldn't happen in a co-ed space where the women are like, face hump me! And the guy next to him's like, okay. Right? Uh-huh. It was this boundary between the performer and the audience. We, the audience, are captivated in this specific way. The performers are going to behave in a certain way. And there is the understanding that the cock's going to stay in the G-string.
Uh-huh.
And when you're being humped on stage, you're not actually being penetrated. So there is safety in that boundary to a certain extent. But there's something about exposing this kind of wildness to the male gaze that I think many women feel deeply unsafe with.
Mm.
Like, if they show their sexual side, it's making them vulnerable to violence, to attack.
Then they have to follow through with it, or else it's like, that's not, or else it's right. not okay.
And they'll be called a slut, they'll be right. diminished in value. Like, all of our slut-shaming, sex-negative culture creates these conditions where it's actually not safe to be a sexual woman. So if we want women to be able to be more bestial and alive with their sexuality at home, safely, within relationships, consensually, then we need to change sex culture, right? Like, that's kind of the baseline here, is that it has to be safe to be a sexual woman out in the world and to expose that kind of enthusiasm to your partner. But how do we take incremental steps towards exposing that kind of enthusiasm? I think I came away with just these thoughts of, how about they show an inkling of that excitement about their partner's bodies? And yes, their partner might not look like Magic Mike. They might not have an 8-pack or 9-pack, dude. That's my extra. And pecs and biceps that are bulging. Like, that might not be the package. But how do you show any sort of excitement, desire, craving, longing about the male body? Because I think most women never express that. Like, they're never, like, excited to see their guy undress. And so maybe that's a step, is to start appreciating the visual stimulation of the male body in whatever package your partner has it, and find the qualities that you like, and find the moments to enjoy that. So that was one piece for me.
Do you think that if men were sort of presenting themselves in some flavor of this, of like, I am presenting myself and I am intending to create desire for you, that would create anything for partners? Or do you think that, I mean, I think there's just so much like shame and awkwardness that could come up in those scenarios that maybe it wouldn't end up feeling sexy. But I just, like, is there some kind of desire for women to have men perform for them?
Well, we talked about this in episode 225, how guys can feel sexier and how they can embody different archetypes. And maybe men need to sneak into the American Storm show and look at the archetypes and see what they resonate with. But I think a little bit of performativity does help, and a little bit of confidence helps. Like, those men don't walk out on stage and, like, scratch their belly and open right. a fridge and be like, oh, I'm reading leftovers tonight. Like, that's not the fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would love to see the parody. American Drizzle. I don't know how it would go.
Oh, yeah, please someone make that. That's amazing.
And I think this is where the domestic does not create eroticism for most people, right? Like, when we're in our everyday life, you and I walk around our house in our pajamas and our yoga pants. We're not performing for one another. We're comfortable at home in that security zone of love.
Right, but then to create the erotic, do we need to create a different space?
Sometimes. People do.
And sometimes.
The answer for all podcasts. Some people need it some of the time. But I think there's two elements to this, right? Well, it's a multifaceted gem. There's the element of performativity and confidence and what's coming from the men on stage at American Storm.
Right. Which is not, like, something that most men access or...
Well, it's their job to be sexy. No, it's their job to work out. It's their job to be an archetype and to strut onto that stage knowing they're turning the crowd on. Like, uh-huh. they walk on with that assumption. And then on the other side of the aisle, there's the audience and their enthusiasm, and they walk into that theater with an expectation of being a little turned on, being allowed to feel wild. There are no consequences.
Right.
Sometimes I wonder how friends deal with these yeah. parties, like, in the aftermath. Like, do you have that, like, judgmental friend, Jody, who's like, oh, you went a little crazy at American Storm. Like, that was unexpected. I didn't expect you to be turned on by that. You know, or do they even not talk about it? Is there this kind of, like, what stays in Vegas, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas mentality? Like, because sometimes you're going with, like, your sister's bachelor party. Like, that's kind of also what confused me, is this public sexuality amongst friends where we don't often have that kind of public display of sexuality and arousal. But in terms of thinking about taking this home, I think both of those elements need to be there, is the confidence, the performativity, and then also the enthusiasm and the willingness to be expressive and to be enthusiastic about your turn on. And I think we need to take this down to what this looks like in the home, which could just be, yeah, your ass looks great in those jeans. Wear them more often.
An appreciation, desire. Yeah.
Like, you're not going to have the strobe lights and the flashing. Like, this isn't a strip club. It's not Las Vegas. It's your house. But how do we bring these elements in a purposeful way? And then I think once you're in bed, how do we allow ourselves to let go, to surrender, to express ourselves a little bit more? Because that's so much of what we witnessed, was just the expression, often through the voice and through the body. There was this freedom of, like, yeah, this is working for me and I'm going to fuel the show. Because the show would be really boring if the audience was sitting there like, oh, that's a nice set of abs, you know? Like, if we treated it like it was the ballet and we're like, oh, good job, bravo, you know, that would be a really boring show. Like, the show depends on the enthusiasm of the audience, and they had all these tricks to engage the audience. You know, like, are you ready to see Terry being naughty? I didn't hear you. Are you ready? You know, and then everyone was like, I want Terry. Terry. And that kind of engagement. And so how do we engage our partner, and how do we ask for their enthusiasm a little bit more? You were just laughing through this entire episode.
I don't know.
Take you back to American Storm.
I just like the idea of, like, someone being in that bedroom, like calling for that partner. Like, come on.
Are you ready to see Johnny?
It's like,
that is not what I mean.
No, I know. But, right.
What would that look like?
Well, it would look like desire and expressing desire, which is something that often gets lost in long-term relationships. You're like, ah, I got you. I don't need to express that I find you desirable, that I want you. And that's a practice. It takes time and effort, and
but it also takes acknowledgement that the erotic is an alternative zone of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And this I could not agree more right now.
So I got into this whole metaphor for, like, a few years, and I kind of let it go, about erotic gameplay and how sex is a game that adults play. And in games, we have other rules that we go by in order to make that game happen. So you don't tackle a friend as you're walking to the store, but on the football field, it's completely expected and you cheer it on, and people are there with the consent that they're going to be tackled.
Right. You don't take it personally that somebody doesn't like you because they just tackled you.
In the bedroom, we need to allow for that to be a little alternative reality that we enter into consensually, where we expect that different things are going to happen. So while you wouldn't, as you're walking through the grocery store, dictate what's happening. Oh, you're putting the apples in the basket. I see that apple looks really ripe and juicy. In bed, dictating what's happening, narrating what's happening, is a really hot turn-on for a lot of people. I'm not even going to attempt to do it because you're just going to giggle. And that's why sometimes when I give examples of erotic dialogue on this podcast, it feels a little awkward. And sometimes while I'm editing and listening back, I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, I would never actually say that. But in bed, I might. And I'm giving you little snippets of sample scripts so you can make it your own. You can do your own thing. Make it in your own voice. But these behaviors we do in bed, we don't do in the rest of our relationships. But if we can give ourselves permission to make the bedroom more like a game space and say there are different rules that apply here and I'm not going to be judged, and it's not like tackling my friend on the sidewalk, it's I'm on a football field, I've got my gear on, I'm playing by different rules, I can use my voice and say things that might seem silly in normal life, but saying, like, oh, you're so big and hard and I want you inside me, like, that might be a huge turn on for both of you to say that out loud. But what does it take to give yourself permission to say it out loud? And I remember as we were going into American Storm, they kept us in this line, this queue, as they were feeding us alcohol for a while.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
And there was this anticipation building and people getting kind of sillier and giddier. Mm. And then when they let us in, you know, the theater was dark and there were lights. And you actively step into an alternate reality.
Right, right. Right, the anticipation is created. Desire is created.
And then there's a ritual that they take you through to put you into that space.
To escalate your experience.
Yes. And so what are the rituals of getting into the erotic zone where we know that daily expectations of behavior are suspended? Mm. You can be someone different with your partner and then go back to like balancing your checkbook and doing the laundry and all of those things.
American Drizzle later.
But how do you create the storm in your bedroom? So I don't think we have any major takeaways for you, except for this idea that when we go to a strip club, when we go to an event like this, we are welcomed into an alternate reality for a set period of time where expectations of behaviors are changed. And with that setup, we watched a theater full of women go wild. Like, you want to talk about girls go wild? Go to American Storm. They were gyrating. They were screaming. They were thrusting. They were begging to be face-humped by strangers. This is not the set of behaviors we see in their daily lives. And so how do we create a different set of expectations in our own bedrooms that free us up to be more sexually playful, curious, imaginative, and expressive? How do we let that voice out so it doesn't get pent up and you don't have to save it for Vegas and it doesn't become this bottled up thing that you need alcohol to pry loose, but it just becomes this playful part of you that gets to be expressed in your bedroom? And I'm going to go there. I'm going to take this from American Storm to our toddler. Because what I've been noticing, our toddler's now 2.5. She's really into imaginative play. And when I'm with her alone and we're just playing, I'm totally fine to be an elephant in one moment and a monkey in the next and then slither like snakes. She's really into animals right now. And we do this. We play it out and I have a big swinging trunk and I'm an elephant and all of these things. And I have no self-censorship about this. Mm. Then the other day we were in this crowded restaurant and she wanted me to play elephant. And all of a sudden I was like, I got a trunk. And I felt the gaze of strangers and I felt like, oh, this isn't a safe environment for me to be as fully expressive as I need to be. So kids are really good at this. They're really good at going into imaginative play and of suspending the rules to create fantasy.
Yeah.
And this is what we need to do in our bedrooms. We need to be willing and active in suspending the rules of daily life so we can go into fantasy. So I think maybe that's the biggest piece here is how do we create an alternate reality within our lives where we suspend the rules, we get to be playful, we get to be imaginative, we get to be expressive, and we're not judged for it. And I think trusting that your partner is not judging you might be the biggest limitation here.
And that you're not judging yourself.
Yeah.
That space has to be created through multiple conversations and gentleness with yourself. But giving yourself space to create the bedroom as a place of erotic play and imagination and altered reality, as you said, is really important to let ourselves really go.
Okay, so we might have to do a podcast on creating a judgment-free zone in bed.
And how to access erotic play and imagination, because it is one of our human superpowers, and I think a lot of us don't really use it enough. It bridges this gap between our general reality and accessing all of these facets of ourselves and giving it a place to be expressed and to share and to explore.
Yeah, and I think even if people are wanting to try out new sexual skills or learn massage or any of these other skills that we talk so much about, the fear of judgment, the fear of doing it wrong, the fear of looking foolish are some of the biggest things that hold people back. And certainly when it comes to fantasy role play or being more enthusiastic in bed or dirty talk, all these things that are really advanced level sexual expressions, certainly the fear of judgment and the fear of looking foolish are going to come up for people. So let's really work on an episode where we break down how relationships, how couples can create a judgment-free zone. I think that's going to be important for people. But for now, that is our story of visiting the American Storm male strip review in Las Vegas. There's others. There's Thunder from Down Under.
Which I'm sure
is... a terrible Australian accent.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was intended to be an accent.
Thunder from Down
Under. No, don't. But it is an interesting experience. If you're in Vegas and you feel like it, I don't know what your experience will be of it, but it's certainly an interesting experience that there's a lot to kind of gain, I think, from exploring being in a really specific erotic space.
And we will continue to go on field trips for you. It's a little harder now with a kid. I'm glad we did a lot of it when we didn't have the kid.
Yeah.
And we should dig out some of our memories of going to sex clubs and play parties and stripping events of all kinds. My favorite is when I went to a strip club in England. This is a little aside.
This is before me.
I was a student. I was like 20 years old and I was really excited to go to a strip event in England. And then I realized the smallest bill in the British currency is a £5 note, which was like $9. And then, so I had these £5 notes, but then I also had like £1 coins, but I didn't know. It's like, how do you tip a stripper That's with a really £1 coin? And I got so upset and embarrassed about this because I wanted to be tipping. Tipping your strippers is very important. I wanted to be paying well. I wanted to be a well-behaved member of the audience, but then I was all confused about the currency.
What did you see other people doing using coins, or how did that work? That's a really good point.
I don't even remember what other people did. I kind of, what I did is I like picked my favorite, then I gave her £5 at the end. And then I had to use the bathroom and I had to like go through the strippers area to use the ladies room, and ended up chatting with them, and I should have just asked them. But it was just one of those things in the moment. I was like, I feel so clunky with my coins, but I can't afford more than one tip. Anyway, more stories to come. We are here for you. We've had lots of sexual adventures and field trips along our path, and wish you many adventures in and out of the bedroom.
Yes, and we are currently exploring how do we continue to keep a long-term relationship, decade in, interesting, compelling, as we are deeply in domestic life and parenting. And how do you...
And dealing with chronic illness. This is a different adventure we're in. But I think this is... What's really important to us is that these podcasts are useful to you and speak to your reality. And that's why we love hearing from you and hearing what's going on in your life. And what's really important to me as a sex educator is that we don't just talk about the wild thrills of sex, but we talk about how it is integrated into our daily lives. What does it mean when you're a new parent? What does it mean when you have a new chronic disease? What does it mean that you're in chronic pain and you still want an active sexuality? Like, that's the most relevant question for me at, you know, my mid to late 30s, 10 years into a committed relationship. This is what sex looks like. And I think it's what it looks like for a lot of you.
For most of us.
And we want to hear what your questions are, what your struggles are. How can we assist you in having a great sex life in a way that makes sense in your life?
Wow. So we are here for you.
Completing one another's sentences.
Indeed. Speaking at the same time. I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.